some of the names of popular toys from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, they kind of capture all the craziness, the joy, and just the fun of being a kid. But below those nutty names are rich veins of nostalgia and memory and history. Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s opens May 24th at the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul. And we're real happy to have Adam Scherer aboard. He's the senior curator and exhibit collections representative at the Minnesota Historical Society. And he is also the curator of the new exhibit down there, Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Adam, I want to thank you for joining us, and welcome to the Roadhouse.
It's my pleasure.
What a crazy fun thing to do is to go back to those days and kind of enjoy those toys all over again, and also to have the freedom, you know, to kind of pick out what you think was significant. How much fun was that for you?
Oh, it was a great deal of fun for me and the whole exhibit team, many of whom, are, of course, are baby boomers, so it was a real trip down memory lane for a lot of us. And I think it's going to be a very popular exhibit, not just with baby boomers, but with their kids and grandkids. So it's I think it's going to be a great experience for multiple generations.
Now, I'm a baby boomer myself, and I was talking to my co-host, Dave Terstegg, earlier off air, and talking over some of the names that are coming out from, again, toys that began back then, first created back then. A lot of those toys are still out there in a newer version for the kids, like Dave's two kids, which are, what are the age of your kids, Dave?
6 and 2.
6 and 2, and they're playing with some of the same toys that we saw back then.
Yeah, and I think what's really going to surprise a lot of our visitors is the fact that a lot of those popular toys have roots in Minnesota, like Twister and the Nerf ball and some other toys that are still very popular today. So I think it's going to be a great learning experience and a lot of fun for folks.
Do you think it was just the fact that suddenly we had, you know, the baby boom generation and all these babies out there that really spawned this toy boom back in the 50s? Or was it something else that maybe just the manufacturing process made them more cheap and available to people?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. Certainly the population was growing at leaps and bounds after World War II, and there were a lot of kids there, and we were all settling into the suburbs. And in tandem with that, there were new technologies, particularly in plastics. Plastics were really starting to come into the fore in the 1950s, due in large part because of the technologies that were being developed during World War II. And so now it was a lot easier and cheaper to make toys than ever before.
I remember growing up, and of course here in this small community, we didn't have television till I was, I don't even remember the age, 7 or 8 or something like that. But was television also a factor maybe having more media so things are learned about?
Absolutely. Television was instrumental to the popularity of a lot of these toys in the 1950s. Mattel was the first company, major company, toy company, to advertise on television during the Mickey Mouse show, of course, in the 1950s. It was very popular. And by the 1960s, marketing had changed. So you now see commercials in the 1960s where advertisers are marketing directly to the children and not to the parents on television. So advertising on television became a key to the success for just about every toy manufacturer in the country.
Could you talk a little of some of the toys in the 50s and some of your favorites in this process, or where they came from and how they evolved?
Well, I think we're going to hit a lot of the highlights for people, certainly talking about the hula hoop and the coonskin cap that was made so popular by the Davy Crockett series in 1955 with Fess Parker. this was a really, really popular time for dolls. Barbie doll came out in 1959 and really changed the game for toys in general in America. So there are a lot of the sort of the highlights that I think people will expect to see. There might be some things that people don't necessarily expect to see, like the Erector set, which actually was invented much, much earlier in 1913, but really grew into its heyday in the 1950s. So I think there'll be some surprises as well as some of the usual suspects for visitors to see.
Now, was something like the hula hoop, was that based on some use in a different culture, or did that just develop spontaneously, just happened?
It really was a spontaneous development, and one of the things that we'll look at in depth, I think, in this exhibit is just how some of these toys were invented by some very, very creative people, and I think that the Minnesota-related toys are going to be especially interesting for people to learn about how, you know, games like Twister or the Nerf ball were developed. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, when did the Nerf ball come along? I remember it being there, but I don't remember when.
It was introduced in 1970, and it was developed by a man from St. Paul named Ren Geyer, who was developing a game he called Caveman. He came up with this idea of having a spongy type ball that you could use in the, to throw simulated rocks at your partners if they were trying to steal some play money from you. The game didn't get anywhere, but the idea of the ball really became popular and was ultimately introduced as the Nerf ball in 1970. And the Nerf football, which came out a couple of years later, was even more popular, and that, of course, has a Minnesota-associated story to it. Fred Cox, who was the kicker at that time for the Minnesota Vikings, was instrumental in helping to develop that.
Really? That's kind of surprising. I didn't even know that myself. That's interesting. The 50s were kind of you think of them as an innocent era. Of course, there's no such thing, but as far as American culture, it was more innocent, as opposed to the 60s when basically all hell broke loose at some point. Is that reflected in the toys that came out during those eras, or is there some correlation?
No, I think we're going to show some examples of that, and that's one of the things that we're consciously trying to do, is show how some of these toys reflect their times. And the 60s, of course, is a time of great change, the development of the counterculture, and you'll see that in some of the toys. I think probably the best example from the 60s is Rat Fink. I don't know how many people will remember that, but this was a sort of a the counterculture's answer to Mickey Mouse, and was developed by Ed Roth, who was an illustrator in California who was also developing hot rod vehicles. And he developed this character named Rat Fink that he began to create in a number of his illustrations, and eventually became a model kit that was developed by Revell in the early 1960s and came out in a variety of different formats. So that's probably one of the best examples of how the counterculture infiltrated in the 1960s into the toy culture.
How did you go about finding some of these toys, you know, all this time later? Was it difficult to find, you know, a good examples that were in good shape, and even to discover which toys were there back then?
Well, we're very fortunate. We have a very strong collection here at the Minnesota History Center, which we will utilize in the exhibit. We also tapped into a number of toy collectors in Minnesota who are very knowledgeable and very generous and shared their collections with us. And we also purchased quite a bit on the open market. This is, you know, a lot of these are now very collectible. A lot of the baby boomers are trying to recapture their youth and the memories of their past, and so there's a very strong market for it. And so we did purchase quite a bit for the exhibit as well.
We're speaking with Adam Scherer, and Adam is a senior curator and exhibit collections rep at the Minnesota Historical Society, talking about their latest exhibit, and that's Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. I think it opens late in May, isn't it, the 24th, Adam?
May 24th, yes.
That's right at the Minnesota History Center in downtown St. Paul. Correct?
Correct.
Oh, good. Yeah. How did you determine, we were talking about some of the toys that came out of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, of course, but particularly starting with the 50s, how did you determine which ones to show, or did you really have no problem picking out which ones were the winners back then?
Well, we wanted to have some of the toys that people would expect to see that were exceedingly popular throughout those three decades. But we also selected some toys that we thought were probably less popular, that people didn't know about, and that, frankly, we felt had very interesting stories in terms of either their development or there were personal stories that we had in mind during the process of exhibit research. And we also found that there were a number of Minnesota-related toys that had interesting stories as well, which I talked about just briefly, like the Nerf Ball and Twister. 3M produced a number of board games in the late 1960s and early 70s. Probably not a lot of people know that. And so we really wanted to tell those stories as well.
Was there any particular stories of the less popular toys that that really caught your imagination, you'd be willing to share one here with us?
Well, I think one of the most interesting toys came from the 1970s, and it was called the Johnny Horizon Environmental Test Kit.
Really?
Believe it or not, this was a toy for kids where you could do your own water testing. So this is really, again, indicative of the times when Americans were being much more conscious about changes in their environment, something you probably would not have seen in the 1950s.
Yeah, that's for sure. They wouldn't have even known what was going on in the 1950s. So there's another example of how things evolve and change.
Absolutely.
You know, in toys as well as everything in our culture. What do you think, something like Slinky, I just think of that as being around forever. When did that come about?
It actually was introduced in the late 1940s and has been incredibly popular throughout the decades. And one of the many activities that visitors will be able to do in the exhibit is to have a Slinky go down the stairs. That, you know, if you remember the old commercials from the 50s and early 60s where they would show the Slinky going down the stairs, visitors who used to do that as a kid will be able to recapture that memory, and younger kids from today who've never probably had a chance to do that will be able to do that as well. So there are going to be a lot of opportunities, not just to look at toys, but to actually play with the toys as well.
Maybe you could give us an idea what the exhibit will look like. How is it? How is it separated?
We're going to have three living rooms: one from the 50s, one from the 60s, and one from the 70s, where the toys will be located, each within their own context. There will also be a garage setting because a number of the toys that we talk about were the types of toys that you would play with outside, like a Stingray bike or jarts, if anybody remembers those lawn darts from the 1970s. So there'll be those settings, and then within each of those settings there will be a PlayStation. Those will be the interactive areas where folks can actually play with the toys, whether it's the Slinkies or Hungry Hippos, or they can try their hand at a hula hoop or a Nerf ball, throwing that around. We'll also have a number of video programs where people can see commercials from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s
as well. That sounds cool.
And there will be a quiz show.
Oh, no.
Where you can test your toy trivia knowledge.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think, didn't you create a book as well? You've been awfully busy with this exhibit and really thorough, a book that's also named the same as the exhibit?
Yes, Kate Roberts, the lead exhibit developer for this project, and I co-authored a book which will accompany the exhibit, which people will be able to purchase both at the History Center and at bookstores around the state, and I think on Amazon as well.
That's great. Did you have an all-time? Now you've signed, there must be like what 3,000-4,000 different toys involved in this exhibit.
Well, I think we've probably got maybe 100 or so toys in the exhibit.
Okay.
Not quite sure.
I was way, way off base there. I was just thinking of all the toys that, but you narrowed this down as to what you're putting in for people to see.
Yes, it was a difficult process, but again, we wanted to hit the highlights from those three decades and also talk about stories of toys that probably not a lot of people know about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it just sounds like a real fun thing, not only for youngsters to go see, but of course, youngsters who are now oldsters who grew up with those toys can kind of relive what they grew up with.
Yeah, I think that's really what we would like to do is to have this be a really fun family experience.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking with Adam Scherer, and Adam is the senior curator and exhibit collection representative at the Minnesota Historical Society. Their latest exhibit, which will be coming out on May 24th, opening down in St. Paul at the Minnesota History Center, is called Toys of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Will that be online at the Minnesota History website?
Yes, folks can go to www.mnhs.org. That's the Minnesota Historical Society website, and get more information about the exhibits and all the other programs that we're going to do in conjunction with the exhibit.
Oh, that sounds great. Adam, I want to thank you so much for joining us here tonight, and I'm sure that exhibit is going to be extremely popular, so good luck with the process.
Well, my pleasure, and thanks for having me.